95.7 Ben FM Philadelphia presents Her Story, hosted by Kathy Romano. Her Story is a weekly tribute to women making a major difference in the lives of others by telling her story.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Good morning and welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. Today's guest is a 21-year-old entrepreneur and Disney radio host. She started her career at the age of 12 and began fielding client phone calls while in high school. Alexa Curtis is now hosting her own show, Fearless Every Day, founded the Be Fearless Summit, which was here in Philadelphia just a few weeks ago, and does speaking engagements around the country. Alexa, thank you so much for coming by to talk to me.
I'm so excited to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
Why are you in Philadelphia?
So I'm here because we had the summit, which was on Friday, and I've actually never been to Philadelphia. And over the past like 3 months, I've come so many times and I'm actually really starting to enjoy it.
So you like it so far?
I love it. I think it's really cool. It's like industrial. But you get that kind of New York City vibe, but in a different way.
Right? It's like a smaller New York City.
Exactly. It's that's how I think of it.
A more manageable.
Yes,
New
that's
York
how
City.
That makes so much sense. Yes.
Why did you pick Philadelphia to start your summit? This was the first summit ever?
Yeah, actually. So this was the first summit ever. And so I had created this deck for this summit and I started pitching it out earlier last year. And then all the colleges, I was pitching it to a lot in my home state and just across the country. And most all of them are saying no. And then I spoke at the Pennsylvania Conference for Women in October, I believe, and just organically met somebody from Drexel and kind of pitched it to them on the spot. And then from there, they approved it.
That conference is a huge one. It's at the convention center, right?
It is. It was a huge one that I spoke at. And I had wanted to speak for so many years. And I spoke this year. Last year, but it was pretty cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your Disney radio show.
Fearless Every Day premiered back in September. And basically the concept behind this show is kind of empowering and inspiring young people to get out of their comfort zone and do something different with their life, because that's really what my podcast is about, talking to different influencers and entrepreneurs. And then I had this idea to pitch it to somebody at Disney, and that's how Fearless Every Day kind of launched.
How did you get connected to Disney?
So you have very good questions. I moved out to LA. I wanted to try it for 3 months over a year ago now. And I kind of BCC'd 466 producers on an email. I had found them all online. And I got one reply from somebody at Disney. And then we started talking about kind of the show and potential ideas for how to integrate me into the company. And it started from there.
That's great. So you just reached out and you were lucky enough to have one person reply back.
Yeah. You know, I think that so much of my story is just this, like, I have no fear of the unknown. And I feel like as an entrepreneur, it's important if you want to continue to grow your company that you don't have any fears of rejection, because you'll get that one yes.
I guess that's where Fearless Every Day came from.
Yes, that makes sense now when I think about it. Yeah, yeah.
So where are you from?
I'm originally from Eastern Connecticut by UConn. So mm-hmm. Super small town, like 4 hours from here. My parents still live there, but very much not LA.
How was the transition for you?
Well, I first moved out when I was 17. I like moved to Manhattan. I lived in Brooklyn. I was like totally broke. I did the starving artist thing, like lived on the floor, had no money. Lived there, had two different apartments there. And then when I decided that I didn't want to move back home, I didn't really want to go to college. That's what really inspired me to continue pitching different brands. And so that was how I started making a living then, was constantly pitching brands before the days of blogging became so popular. So I lived in New York for a year. Then I went to Boston for 2 years. And then I moved to LA. And it was difficult because I don't have anyone there. No family. I had no friends. Now I created a good circle. But the first year was... it was the hardest city I've lived in so far.
You didn't go to college.
I didn't go to college.
Because you don't hear that often anymore.
No, you don't. College is such an expected path, obviously. But I just, from such a young age, kind of knew what I wanted to do for my life.
And do you get any pushback from,
oh, yeah,
from anybody?
Oh, my God, all the time. And the weird thing is I get hired by so many colleges. So, you know, they want me to come and speak and they're so inspired by my story. But it's always like at the end of every talk, like, are you sure you're not going to go? And I'm like, No, I came here to present a talk to your students. At the end of the day, it's my personal decision. For a while, it was like my parents were like, you know, what are you going to do? And how are you going to make a living off of this? You know, when I was 15, 16, and now they don't say anything.
If you're being asked to talk to college students, what are you saying to them since you didn't go to college?
Yeah, well, I don't advise people to not go to college. My best piece of advice is go to college because I understand that I'm very rare in the sense that I knew what I wanted to do. I never say don't go to college. And so a lot of the talks that I'll do revolve around being your own brand, how to kind of make side money when you're in college, following your dreams. I have a whole talk that surrounds how to follow your dreams and how to get out of your comfort zone, because so many young people struggle with that, whether it's getting a freelance writing job or breaking into the entertainment industry. So that's really what a lot of the talks are about.
Now, your bio says that you started your career when you were 12 years old.
Yep, that's when I started.
What were you doing at 12?
So I started the blog back when I was 12, and it initially started as a fashion blog, which a lot of people don't really realize because now it's so much more on social media and mental health. But I had initially started the blog because I just was bullied. I had no friends. I didn't fit in. And I wanted to kind of create this platform for me to get out of my comfort zone. And I loved writing. So that's how it started. Again, this is 2011, before the word influencer became anything.
But that's really what you were doing.
Yeah. You know, for so many years, I had no followers. It was just, okay, I just did it because I loved it. I was not making any money, nor did I intend to make any money.
And what was the name of the blog?
It was called A Life in the Fashion Lane.
And are you still doing the blog?
Yeah. So I run the site full time. And so I do a lot of sponsored content on there and just a lot of different content relating to social media and mental health. But now it's called Life Unfiltered with Alexa. So it doesn't focus on fashion anymore.
You took it from a fashion blog and kind of transformed it.
Yeah.
But you're still doing the blog today.
Yeah.
But you started at 12, mm-hmm. right? So then I read that you would take phone calls in high school from clients.
I started kind of this LinkedIn page. And from there, it was getting a lot of different brands reaching out to me. You know, do you do social media? Or like, can you help me with my social media? And so that's how I started making a little bit of money. And I was a freshman in high school. So basically, I was going back and forth. I remember it so clearly, going back and forth to the bathroom all the time and like taking these phone calls. But I had this one teacher who really believed in me. So he didn't really care that I had those kind of things. He knew that I had this little bit of a side job. But it was very difficult. But I was so obsessed with, you know, kind of making money and just running what ended up becoming this company. And
So the clients? What were you doing for them?
It was initially I had a prescription shaving brand. I had a glove wear brand. I had a personal stylist in New York, and I never disclosed my age. And then people would always find out my age and be like, there's no way that you're 16, like doing my social media. But I would buy like the $50 social media for dummies books. And that's kind of how I like trained myself how to do it.
So you were running these companies' social media?
Yeah. So, you know, like manually posting their Instagram pictures and their tweets and like coming up with content. And I was like so lost. I didn't even know what I was even doing. But yeah, I did that for like a solid period of time until I realized I really didn't like enjoy doing that anymore. And I wanted to do my own thing full time.
Now, you mentioned being bullied in high school.
I started getting bullied pretty much in the seventh grade. And I was bullied up until I actually left and went to online school my sophomore year of high school. And that was just for a range of reasons, specifically being just the fact that I just didn't fit in. I was not the cool kid, never had a lot of friends. I never had any kind of connection to the kids in my school. And I loved doing things that kids who are my age don't necessarily love to do, like write and go to fashion week, do these things at such a young age. So that stemmed a lot of it. And then just really the minute you show that you're different to anyone and in any school, you kind of are going to face a lot of backlash. So then, especially when I started the blog, that became just a huge reason that
really,
really bullied me. Yeah, it was definitely quite difficult, but I think it has inspired me if more to inspire kids that were that age, because I know what it's like to be that age.
Have any of the kids that bullied you reached out to you?
Oh, yeah, they reach out all the time. And it's so funny because I don't know if they forget this girl who was evil to me. There were so many girls who used to like trip me on the bus. My dad casually was like talking about this girl the other day. And I was like, that's so weird. She sounds like one of the girls who bullied me. She cuts my dad's hair now. And I was like, My dad's like, people change. And I'm like, does she know that you're my dad? You know, I'm from a pretty small town. There's one high school in the town. So like everyone pretty much knows me. And I'm like, do you know, like she traumatized me. People do change. But like bullying is a real thing. It should not be taken lightly at all.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your dad and the story behind him and how you got through a difficult time in your life.
Yeah. So when I was 7, my dad was wrongfully convicted and actually put in prison in Cranston, Rhode Island. And the year that he got out is the year that I started my blog. So a lot of people don't know that. I think that's why I have talked more about it as I've gotten older, is because I think people are like, oh, she's this like rich girl from Connecticut. And like, she just posts pretty pictures. And if you really look into my story, like that is the opposite of my upbringing. So that has impacted me in so many ways. And I think that's maybe subconsciously why I started the blog, and also why I started talking more about social media and mental health. I just know the effects of what you see online, and then also how a lot of stuff just in the world in general is not always how it's shown to be.
I also read that you say being able to rule your own life is an incredible feeling.
Yeah.
So what, explain that.
Yeah. So I think what I mean when I say that is there's such a, you kind of just this undeniable passion that you have, even more so when you can wake up every day and you're the one telling yourself to do. But along with that comes a lot of downsides. Like the responsibility is tremendous if you run your own company or you ever want to run your own company. A lot of people don't see the work that goes in behind the scenes. You're just seeing the finished product. It's, you know, the best thing that I could ever imagine doing with my life, because I'm just so type A and so driven. So I used to have all these internships and I just would either get fired or I'd quit. So I'm not really one for working for somebody else. But also, I just love having the flexibility that I can travel and do these things, work while I do that. But it's not like I'm just sitting in one place every day.
Where can people find your blog?
So the blog is lifeunfilteredwithalexa.com. And then I'm on social media at Alexa underscore Curtis.
And what about the Disney radio show?
So you can listen to Fearless every day. It actually airs every day on Radio Disney, which is available on the Radio Disney app, Sirius XM, and iHeartRadio.
Tell me about your speaking engagements and what you talk about during these conferences. I know that the conference in Philadelphia already happened, but if somebody was to come out and see you speak, what are some things you talk about?
That's a good question. So a lot of the times, if I do like different speaking engagements, whether it's at a school or it's a high school or a college, usually if it's a high school, it's on social media and mental health. So educating kids about social media and the downsides to the internet. And then if it's at a college, I usually have this one talk that I present that's really kind of about getting out of your comfort zone and being your own brand. So that's one that I started doing more recently when I started getting approached by colleges, that really just kind of fine tunes things you can do to be your own boss or to get the tools you need to get your dream career, and how to also make a living doing something that you love, because it's not easy.
No, it's certainly not.
It's not.
And you know what? If you do something that you love, you're lucky.
Yeah, it's very hard. And I think people settle in the sense that it's so difficult to do what you love. But I think that there's other ways to go about it, and like different techniques there are to get your dream job or your dream career and not settle or lack happiness because you get frustrated or whatever.
Or you just settle in. I just talked to somebody a few weeks ago who changed her entire life path from her marriage to her career and completely changed everything to do something that she actually wanted to do and that was conducive to her and her kids and her family. And, you know, she said it was scary at first, but now she's so much happier.
Exactly. You know, it's very scary, but also life in general is so scary. But my best advice is just that you don't want to die knowing you could have done more with your life. I don't know. I think if you put everything into perspective, that happiness is so important. And I can vouch for, you can have all the money or you can have no money. And if you are waking up every day and you have all this money and you're unhappy, it's not going to make you happy.
You mentioned mental health a couple of times. Did you have any type of mental health issues, or did you have someone in your life that did?
Yeah. So all of the above. So my mom had depression. My dad battles depression, and my sister's had a range of mental health issues. I have anxiety and depression, so I manage them just both really with therapy and meditation and exercise to the best I can. Some days are very hard and some days are very great, so it just depends.
I've tried to meditate. I do meditate, but I try to do it more on a regular basis, even if it's just 10 minutes, but I find it so helpful. And when I first started meditating, I thought, what is this? What's happening? I'm getting nothing out of this. And I left it for years. years.
Yeah.
And somebody else suggested to me, try it. Try it again. I did. And I really enjoy it.
Did you do meditation on its own or on an app? Because I use Headspace.
I did try Headspace.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I do it on the app now.
Okay.
When I first tried it, I didn't, because the person who was telling me about it or kind of coaching me, she didn't use anything. Mm-hmm. She just sat in her yoga room and meditated.
Yeah.
And to me, I was like, what's going on outside?
Yeah.
There's an ant on the floor. There, you know, like.
You know, of course, I can't do it by its own. I mean, I knew a girl actually who now lives here who tried to teach me how to do transcendental meditation.
Yeah.
And I remember doing it, and it was like, okay, when she told me, but it's good enough for me, 10 minutes in the morning with Headspace. That's all I need.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Perfect.
So if anybody's interested in trying meditation, we both agree
Headspace.
That that's...
And meditation in general, yeah.
Yeah, meditation in general, but that Headspace app is
really good.
Yeah. Okay, so people can basically find you all over the place. They can find you on the radio. They can find you on the blog. You've got social media. You do speaking engagements.
Yeah.
I'm imagining if you are going to speak in the area anytime soon again, it'll be listed on your website.
It will be. The next one that I have is actually at Quinnipiac College, which is in like Naugatuck, Connecticut, on April 5th. But in between now and then, I need a little bit of a break. It's been a long 4 months. So, but that's the next one.
Well, enjoy your rest.
Get
some meditation.
I know. I need some Headspace.
Alexa, thank you so much for coming by. It was nice to meet you.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having such a great show and for having me on.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Don't forget to check out Alexa's blog. It's lifeunfilteredwithalexa.com. Also follow her on social media, Alexa_Curtis. Don't go anywhere. We're not finished yet. I have another great guest coming up right now.
This is Her Story with Kathy Romano on 95.7 Ben FM.
March is National Kidney Month, and the National Kidney Foundation is working all month to raise awareness. 30 million American adults are estimated to have chronic kidney disease, and most aren't even aware of it. Kidney disease is the ninth leading cause of death in the United States. Today's guest is a member of the National Kidney Foundation's Kidney Advocacy Committee. Carrie Maxwell was diagnosed with a kidney disease in 1989. Her father suffered kidney disease and had a kidney transplant in the early 80s. Both her siblings were diagnosed, and it's likely that any of her three children may also be one day. Please welcome Carrie Maxwell. Carrie, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks for having me, Kathy.
So March is National Kidney Month. You're here to raise awareness. What exactly do you do for the National Kidney Foundation?
So I, as a patient, work with them in a volunteer capacity to just raise awareness, meet with legislators. That's what I'm just most recently doing with them, going to Capitol Hill and talking with senators and congressmen and putting kidney issues and the issues that kidney patients face in front of them to be sure that they are aware and can help vote in favor of some of the initiatives that we are interested in pushing through.
Oh, wow.
Some of the other things are just through social media and other methods, just getting some awareness out there. As you mentioned, most people aren't aware. Most of the 30 million Americans that have a chronic kidney disease don't know it until it's too late to really change lifestyle and do things to prolong their kidney health. So really getting early detection out there as a goal for the public.
You suffer from a kidney disease. What is the disease and what exactly does that mean?
Sure. It's actually called polycystic kidney disease. And it just means poly, meaning many, and cystic, meaning cysts that form in the kidney. And that just as they grow and multiply, they just start to hamper the work of the kidney, which, you know, most people don't realize what the kidneys do, but they filter your blood. And they also are responsible for lots of other things like creating red blood cells. And the list goes on and on of things that the kidneys do for your body. So when they're not healthy, the function declines and then you start to become more medically necessary with medicines and interventions like dialysis and eventually a transplant. So just kind of like a long way of saying it's something that over time impedes the function of a healthy kidney.
So how are you diagnosed? You talked about people not even knowing that they have a kidney disease. Did you know, or how did you know, and how did you figure it out?
So when my father was diagnosed back in the very early 80s, it was known at that time as a hereditary disease. So my parents knew there was a chance that their children would carry the disease. I don't think they realized or could even imagine that all three of us would end up with it because the odds are 50-50.
Both of your siblings have the same disease as well?
Correct.
And your dad, all the same?
Yes, correct. Yes. Okay. And his mother also had it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's generational. So my parents did know to test me. So when I was about 9 years old, then they had me tested. They kept that kind of information to themselves for a while and for a good reason. There's nothing that they could have really done for me at that time. What they did do was put on a great example of healthy lifestyle and being your own best advocate. So my father having a kidney transplant back in the 80s, it was basically unheard of. It wasn't something that you hear about on the news like you do now. There weren't living donation organ chains like there are now. There wasn't social media to try to connect you with a potential donor. It was all done through people that would pass away from some other, you know, accident or illness. So it was really, really unheard of. So there was nothing at that time that was in the works for any sort of treatment or cure. There's still no cure, but they waited till I was an adult to kind of let me know that I had the disease, and then I could start to make my own choices then as an adult.
So what are those choices?
So for me, really just watching the things that I put into my body that will affect my kidneys. So that means everything. That means the amount of caffeine that you consume. That means whether or not you decide to smoke or not. That means alcohol intake. That means sodium intake, protein, things that to excess will not help your kidneys function better. And when you have a disease that affects your kidneys, you kind of want to give them all the help they can get. So, you know, what foods to limit, what kind of lifestyle choices you want to make, things like that.
And do your siblings live the same way?
Let's see, are they listening to this? Not exactly, but my sister, who does live close by, she is starting now, as she's much younger, but starting to actively take a role in her health and gaining control of the choices that she can make to prolong her function.
Realizing the importance of it.
Absolutely.
Will you eventually need a kidney transplant?
So that's really the unknown. My father received his transplant at about the same age that I am right now and was on dialysis for about 2 years prior to that. On the kidney transplant waiting list for about 18 months, which is also really unheard of. Today, people wait years for an organ, which is really the sad part and what we want to call attention to with National Kidney Month. But for me, I was investigating different ways I could prolong my kidney health when I stumbled into information about a clinical trial that was going on nationally, but a center right here in Philadelphia at the University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. So you found a trial that they were doing out of the University of Penn?
Correct.
And you took part in it?
I did. So 3 years I spent taking trial medication. The medication's goal was to stop or slow the growth of cysts. So I participated with that for 3 years. And in April of 2018, the drug actually received FDA approval. So that was a big win for people with the disease that I have.
Yeah, sure. And did it stop or did it slow down the growth of the cyst?
So I would call my progression stable at this point. There hasn't been further rapid decline, and I'm still on the medication, and my doctors monitor everything very closely. I can't say enough good things about the people at Penn. I know they were looking at everything very closely and making sure that it was a good fit for me. The drug was a good fit for me.
Do you have to have any surgeries to remove the cyst?
You can have them drained. But I understand it's very painful and they can come back. So often people don't opt for that kind of treatment. Instead, what they can have done is called a nephrectomy, which means they remove the kidney or both kidneys if you are going to be having a transplant.
So they can remove both kidneys prior to a transplant?
They can, but you will be tethered to dialysis, which is just a fancy way of saying a machine that cleans your blood like your kidneys would.
Sure.
So you would be you would not be able to stop going to dialysis. And most people do that for a few hours, 3 times a week if they go to a center. But some people do it in their home, and that's a different method.
Last year, I had a living kidney donor on the show, and she had donated her kidney to somebody that she didn't know. And you mentioned earlier about social media, and her situation happened on social media. And there was this whole chain of events, chain of donations that happened because she decided that she wanted to donate her kidney to somebody, which was really amazing. So if there is somebody who's out there who's listening and may want to donate a kidney, what can you tell them?
So first of all, I mean, that's really the gift of life. Being on dialysis or any other treatment that you have to be on if you're not a kidney patient, because you can donate part of your liver. There are other organs that you can receive from people that want to donate, but mostly liver and kidney are living donation organs. So it really does change someone's life. Someone that's a patient that's waiting on that waiting list, if they're on dialysis, that's basically life support. That's not a way to live. They are not able to travel, you know, pretty much, you know, because you need to be in your center on the days they have you scheduled 3 days a week for a couple hours at a time. It's very draining. It's not something that when you get off the dialysis machine, you feel like you're ready to go
right
back to work or run a marathon or, you know, do kind of the day-to-day activities that you did before you got that sick. Just like you said, there are altruistic donors out there that just want to give a part of themselves, and whether it's to help someone they know and love or just to help a stranger, it's really just an amazing gift and it's to be applauded.
I have a friend who gave her one kidney to her brother. I see her at least once a month and she's doing great. I mean, there are certain changes that she needs to make to her life. She always is concerned about medicines that will filter through the kidneys. She can't take them. Certain ways of eating and different things, different ways to change that she had to change her life after donating the kidney. But I mean, other than a few little things that I talked to her about, she seems to be fine.
Yeah. And if you think about it, everyone has two kidneys. You know, we're born with two and you only need one to live. But as you said, there are tiny changes that you may want to make because you only have one, but they are really tiny. Things like not taking ibuprofen, you know, as a medication and just opting for Tylenol instead, limiting the amount of red meat or things that you might consume. But you have to be pretty healthy to be able to give away a piece of your body to someone else. So I think if you're healthy enough to donate like that, then you're probably already really living a healthy lifestyle and really thinking about, you know, others, you know, putting others' needs ahead of your own.
If someone wants to find out more information about the National Kidney Foundation or donating a kidney, is there a website they can go to?
I would point them to kidney.org, which is the National Kidney Foundation's website. And from there, they can get information about kidney diseases, prevention, advice on nutrition, how to find practitioners. They can also find information about what's called the Big Ask, Big Give, which is their living donation initiative. But yeah, they can all find that at kidney.org.
Great. Carrie, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm Kathy Romano. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.